Merry Christmas. What a splendid night. What a cold night. What a good night to be inside with family and friends, to remember and to celebrate, to experience the love of God in Jesus Christ on this night. Christmas, what a thing this Christmas is, right? The cultural dimension of Christmas has become a worldwide phenomena, has it not? There are Christmas traditions around the world, some of them connected to the Christian faith and others not so much. In Japan, where only 1% of the population are professing followers of Christ, Christmas is a big cultural deal. And it turns out, for those of us in Kentucky, this is a little something special, that in Japan, the favorite Christmas meal is KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Who would have guessed it? Who would have guessed it? In the Philippines, which has a long history of the Christian faith, there is the Festival of the Giant Lanterns. And there is one town known as the City of Fernando, which claims to be the capital of the Christmas Lantern Festival. Villages and towns all around seek to make the largest lanterns, which are often based on a design that reflects the Star of Bethlehem. In Iceland, which has a spotty history with the Christian faith, there's the story of the 13 Yule, Y-U-L-E, lads, who are based on the 13 tricksy trolls that live in the cold landscape of Iceland. And for 13 nights leading up to Christmas Day, young people put empty shoes at windowsills, hoping that one of the good trolls will leave them a good present. But if not, there are always the bad presents. And they often like to break into your home, slam doors, and go figure, steal yogurt. In Austria, I'm most concerned. My father's family spent a generation in Austria. They were from Slovenia originally. And it's pretty traditional. They speak to the children about St. Nicholas. Santa Claus is visiting, and for all the good children brings good treats. But in Austria, there is the Krampus demon, K-R-A-M-P-U-S, which visits the bad children. That must be a nation of children with PTSD to lay awake at night fearing the Krampus demon. And then there's the USA. What are some of our traditions? The lighting of the public Christmas tree, and is not the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree kind of the national Christmas tree? There are the hundreds, if not thousands, of nutcracker performances across major metropolitan areas and even in little cities. There's something that came along long past when we were parenting young children, Elf on a Shelf. I don't even want to know what that means. There's the traditional How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rudolph. There's shopping at the malls. Isn't that a tradition? And then there are songs, all kinds of songs. The most popular Christmas song of all time, we are told, is Bing Crosby's I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas. We've gotten oh so close. And then there's the song that I think many of us will also know that Bing made famous. It rose quickly into the top 10 in 1943. I'll be home for Christmas. I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. This song was written to bring comfort and hope to men and women serving in the armed forces during the Second World War. It kind of became the most favorite song behind the national anthem in World War II once it came out. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams. We can imagine all the military personnel who listened to that song and were dreaming of being home with family, but knew that they had to be where they were and would only be home in their dreams. What a beautiful song. And it's good to remember how it originated and who it was written for. 1943, for all the military and their families in the Second World War. One of the most common denominators across cultures is that whether Christmas is celebrated as something deeply personal and communal, as an aspect of our faith and love for Jesus Christ, or it simply is a cultural event, families want to be home. People want to go home and be with their loved ones. Whether it's families of origin, extended families, or families created in friendship, it is so a part of the human condition to want to belong, to want to embrace, to want to be welcomed, to want to accept and be accepted. This longing to be home. Half of the news for 2 weeks around Christmas in America is simply about all the travel plans and the air flights and the road conditions, because the main story is people trying to get home, wanting to be home. It's this deep longing, is it not? C.S. Lewis, one of my favorite quotes by Lewis, who wrote and spoke during the Second World War about the hope and the strength of the Christian faith, would write this. He said that the Christian says creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exists. A baby feels hunger. Well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim. Well, there is such a thing as water. Men and women feel sexual desire. Well, there is such a thing as sex. And if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy it, that does not prove that the universe is a fraud. Probably earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy, but only to arouse and to suggest a real thing and a greater thing. Now, the wonderful thing is that the longing and desire for family is both an earthly and a heavenly thing. Can you not think of moments in your own life where family has been that wonderful place to be? That somebody opens the door with a twinkle in their eye and a place in their heart for you. Or maybe you've had the greater joy to be the person who opens the door with the twinkle in your eye and the place in your heart to welcome somebody home. This hunger for home, this desire for family, this thirst to be connected, is it not both real in this world? And are we not aware that there is something more than what we experience in the here and now? Can we not all tell stories of how wonderful family is? And can we not all tell stories of how wacky and not so wonderful family can be? Christmas is a wonderful time because we celebrate how God initiated in Jesus Christ his great plan to bring his love to us, his rescue plan to us, to bring us what we call salvation. And the way in which he does it is by sending his son to be the child in a holy family. I feel like I have to come clean with you just for a moment. because, well, I won't include PM in the more shallow expressions of what I'm going to share with you, but I've definitely had, when certain denominations during the Christmas season put out a stable and a manger in front of their church, and they simply put a baby doll in the manger, and there ain't no mama or daddy, that's just wrong. That's just wrong. It's theologically wrong. Do you know why those of us who are small C Catholic Christians always have Mary and Jesus? It's to demonstrate that Jesus is fully human. He's not some baby who fell out of the sky. He's not an angel. He's not an alien. He's not an other thing. You don't have Jesus without Mary. You don't have Jesus without Joseph. We speak of the Savior coming in a holy family. Because it's not only the way in which God saves, but it gives us a vision of what God is about doing. He's not about sort of bringing us as individuals, lone rangers, into some special, unique relationship with himself, and we all walk alone, never talk. He's come to build a new family. And when we see the Holy Family with Jesus in the manger in Bethlehem, God is signaling so much about who he is and how it is that we could respond and begin to participate and belong to what he is doing. God gives us a baby in a family in a city called Bethlehem for a reason. The child, the picture of vulnerable and humble and even weak. And will not the Apostle Paul speak of the love of God demonstrated in Jesus Christ as showing the weakness of God? We who are enamored of strength and winning and success encounter this child, vulnerable and humble and weak. And we discover that God has showed up in this child in a small village called Bethlehem, truly one of the smallest towns in the whole land of Israel. There were bigger places for him to have been born simply in the land of Israel. The prophet Micah would say, "Oh, you little town of Bethlehem, small and insignificant." There's deep meaning in the littleness and the insignificance of Bethlehem. We who often try to make things happen on the basis of our own greatness and our own merit and our own achievement come face to face with the God who says, "I am not looking for you in all your greatness. I am looking to meet you in humility." God did not elect great cities or great people on the basis of prominence or grandeur or distinction. God chose Bethlehem, a small town, where a family of no great distinction. This past summer, Diane and I were privileged to be on an art tour with a group of friends. We were with old friends, we made new friends on the tour. We went to Paris, which is known as the City of Lights. But Bethlehem was no Paris. Bethlehem was no City of Lights. And yet in Bethlehem was the light of the world. In a hidden town off the main road, among a small group of people living ordinary lives, God decides to announce that he has come. God, who is the source of all relationships, the source of all family, has come to show us once again what it looks like to love one another, to learn the way of peace, to walk in his light. And you know, we truly believe that probably Jesus was born at night. The tradition, the stories, even the stories in Luke's gospel point to the darkness of night, which is obviously a contrast to Jesus being the light of the world. But my dear friends, my dear brothers and sisters, make no mistake that if Jesus had been born at 12 noon in broad daylight, we still would have needed the light he brings. Because it's not about the light that can be fixed by turning on a lamp or hitting the switch. It's about a kind of darkness that it's made its way into our souls and out of our souls into our world and has broken us apart. Jesus comes to be that light. The Irish, who are known for many things, have a tradition. And in their tradition, some of you may do this at your house, they began several generations ago to put single candles in windows. And that was their Christian Christmas tradition, to put candles, lights in the window. And the candle was to signal something symbolic. They didn't want to be like the innkeeper, who supposedly, although he doesn't exist in the actual story, but the folk story is that there was the innkeeper who said there was no room at the inn, right? And so the Irish said among themselves, well, we want to be a place that would always welcome Jesus. Every house, we want our house to be a place that would welcome the Holy Family. And then they said this. They said, well, not only do we want to welcome Jesus, but we've begun to get what Jesus is about. And so when we put the light in our window, we're saying, not only would we welcome Jesus, but we welcome any person in need. We joked the other day in the office that maybe some of us would want to take our candles out of the window. That's a serious posture to take. That here at our house, we would welcome anybody in need. Because that would be like Jesus. Well, in some ways, what I want to say to you, my friends, tonight is something very simple. That in Bethlehem, God made Bethlehem the window of the world. And to the whole world, he put the light. And God was saying to every single person, come home. There's a place for you here. And there's no bar you have to meet to be able to get inside. There's no standard you have to have accomplished. There's no requirement that you had to meet. That when God sent Jesus into the world and in Bethlehem as the light of the world, God is saying to all the prodigal men and women who have wasted their lives, to all the uptight, angry men and women who are the rule keepers of the world but shut people out, and to everybody in between, God says, come home. Come home. Come become my son and daughter. John, who some of the tradition tells us may have been the youngest of the 12 apostles, just barely a teenager when he was following Jesus around, who seemed to have, well, he was part of the inner three, Peter, James, and John, who got to see some things that the other 12 didn't. He was being closely mentored by Jesus. He was intimate with Jesus. He was close to Jesus. He's the one who would write the words, God is love. So John knew something about God and Jesus' life, right? And John would write, years later, he said, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, he being Jesus, if we walk in the light, there's a dream to walk in the kind of light that Jesus walks in, to walk in the place where our thoughts are illumined, where the desires of our hearts are lit up, where our actions actually bear light to others, to walk in the light as Jesus is in the light. I guess that means something like when John and Peter and James and all the others, when Jesus said, follow me, to walk in the light is to learn to come to the manger and say, I want to follow you. I want to so be with you that I learn from you and I become like you as you are in my life. If we were to walk in the light as he is in the light, then John writes these words, then we have fellowship, community, family with one another. The story of Christmas is the story of the God who sets the light, announces the invitation, opens the door, and says that that longing you have for love, that longing you have for community and family, that longing and ache and desire, all those moments when it's wonderful, that's me at work. Every positive, healing, wonderful, funny moment in family is from God. And every moment of brokenness and pain and struggle and deep sighing that comes just struggling to be family, that points us that there is more, and that we as human beings need something, someone more than ourselves to help us on this journey to be the family that we were created and long to be. And it only takes a willingness to go to Bethlehem. It only takes a willingness to go to the place of humility and insignificance, and where all of our achievements and accomplishments really, it's not what is helpful. It's the place where we bring ourselves to be embraced by the one who is the source of the God love that can change hearts, heal individuals, mend marriages, put together families, give strength and hope to all of us as we struggle to learn the way of Jesus, which is the way of love. Which is the way of love. And at the end of the day, if you dream of America without racism, you're dreaming of a dream that Jesus started. If you're dreaming of an end to the war in the Ukraine, you're dreaming a dream that Jesus started. If you're dreaming of a family able to sit at table and everybody connect heart to heart, you're dreaming a dream that begins in Jesus, who is the source, but not only the source, the power, the ability, the capacity to begin to take one step at a time, to be the people, the family, to be the light bearer of the one who is the light. The scriptures, in speaking of Christmas, of this event where God sends his son, God comes among us as the light of the world, it speaks of gloom being lifted, darkness being lit, of a new day and a new beginning. But it does not happen because we bring what we think is our best. It happens because we bring our true and real selves. Bethlehem invites this. Acknowledge that God has sent the light into the world. Acknowledge our own poverty and need. And acknowledge that he welcomes us to begin to transform us, to change the world. This little child, the Savior of the world, the light. And so tonight, when you come to the altar, you're coming to the manger once again. And come once again to receive the light in the poverty of our own shadows, in the poverty of our own need, to welcome this child. Amen.